Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ayo, what it do, baby? It's the Preachers and Sneakers podcast, back at it again with another super dope conversation. On today's episode, we get away from the theological discussion about sneakers and streetwear and all that, and we talk to one of the biggest names in sneaker reviewing, content creation, YouTube, all that good stuff. Today, I've got my homie Jock Slade, a.k.a. Cousteau, on all the socials. He decided that he had enough free time to come stop in on the most popular sneaker podcast, the Preachers and Sneakers podcast, to chop it up about all things sneakers, content creation, his rap career, his appearances on Community, all that good stuff. He's a super fun dude. He creates some amazing content across all the platforms. And if you've never heard of him before, I think you're going to be a huge fan by the end of this conversation. So stay tuned for my conversation with Jock Slade. Today's episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast is brought to you by the Hidden Figures podcast, my new project with my buddy Justice Marimi, where we talk all about building wealth, how to steward it, and how to feel good about it. We also talk about saving, giving, investing, all that good stuff. And we've got some really awesome conversations coming up with guys like Anthony O'Neill from Ramsey Solutions and Brandon Turner from Bigger Pockets. You're going to learn all about real estate and getting out of debt, saving, all that good stuff. So head on over to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, review, and share all that good stuff. Also, if for some reason you haven't done so already, subscribe to the Preachers and Sneakers podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave a rating and a review and share with a friend or an enemy, depending on your thoughts on the podcast. So really appreciate you doing that, and make sure that you subscribe. Okay, enough of all this. Let's get to my conversation with Jock Slade. Today on the Preachers and Sneakers podcast, I've got, dare I say, one of my sneaker idols, if I'm allowed to say that. He's an OG unboxer. He's a sneaker reviewer, a rapper, a tech, music, entertainment commentator, an actor, an Xbox collector. But most importantly, he shared the TV stage with my homie Words Played. That's right. I've got Jock Slade, a.k.a. Cousteau, man, on the podcast that is, today.
That is quite the intro. That's quite the intro. That makes me sound like I am a lot more important than I actually am. But yeah, I'll take it. I'll take it and I'll play it for my mom.
Heck yeah.
She'll appreciate it.
You think they bought it?
I think so.
It's worth every dollar you're paid, I think. So, Jock, thanks so much for doing this. I mean, when I say this, like, you know, I don't really want to idolize people, but since I've been interested in sneakers, you've been one of the top guys that furthered my interest in the sneakers. Like, the whole unboxing experience, the kind of commentary on resale and what's going to kind of be a brick or what's going to be hyped, all that kind of stuff. And then all the things you've done in kind of the tech space and entertainment space. I'm a big fan of your career, so I appreciate you doing this.
Thank
and
you.
I know you're in LA doing big things. So how are things out in LA currently?
Things are great. Nice, beautiful day today. You know, just working. That's it. Just like anybody else. People think I live this glamorous life, but really all I do is sit in the studio and make videos and edit videos all day long.
And that is where
the reality of my life.
That is the kind of the bulk of the work, I would think, is the editing piece, right? You're spending a ton of time on Premiere or whatever you use. That's
absolutely
awesome, man. So for people that maybe, so the people that listen to my podcast, pretty diverse backgrounds. So for the people that aren't in the sneaker world and maybe not know about your YouTube and all the stuff you're doing, do you mind giving me a quick background about how you kind of got to the place you are in your career and all that?
Yeah, so I started way back in 2010. I was writing about sneakers for sneaker websites, and this was before before sneaker YouTube was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of guys there, like Franelations, Sneak Geeks. They were already on the platform creating content, and a couple of other folks. And then I was working for one of the bigger publishers, and I started doing content with them, just creating videos online for them. I wanted to create something that looked like a TV show sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I was doing this show called Today in Sneaks, which was like this e-news version. I was doing Today in Sneaks and This Week in Sneaks. It's funny because you see like some of the sneaker YouTubers are like kind of reproducing that same sort of content these days.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's a few kind of weekly update sneaker shows now. And so you were one of the first.
So I was doing that back in 2010. I probably started doing unboxings, I would say probably in 2014, 2015. And then it's just kind of grown from there. Did the MJ House tour for the launch of one of the signature shoes. And that really helped kind of catapult me because that video went viral on its own.
It has like totally 17 million views
outside of me. Yeah. Totally outside of me. And the funny thing about that is that it went viral like 6 to 9 months after it was already online. So I had posted it and it did like, I believe it did like 60,000-70,000 views or something like that. And it was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Like that's a successful video back then for me. That was great. It was awesome. And then like 6 to 9 months later, it just started kind of building momentum until it hit 1 million, and then it just kept growing and going and going. And now it's sitting at, 17 million, which is has nothing to do with me. Like people are like, oh, you did this. I was like, that has absolutely nothing to do with me.
Was it
like,
the algorithm?
That's just the luck of the draw. It had to be the algorithm, the right place, the right time. It just, I don't know what it was, but it had nothing to do with my skill or my talent.
I'm going to force you to not be so humble throughout this conversation. So how was that like? I mean, a very select few people have been able to see MJ's compound. And not only did you get to go, but you got a bunch of swag and stuff there too, right? At his gym?
Yeah. We got to play on his court. We got to go inside of his gym. We got to go inside his house, look around a little bit of the house, probably more of the outhouse than the actual house. Uh-huh. I mean, it was obviously a great experience. Like, I think more than anything, going through those gates was probably the coolest thing, like just going through the 23 gates. Like I'm actually inside the property line. Like that was probably like the biggest moment, but it's obviously fun to get to play basketball on the court where he trained and practiced and all that stuff. And then seeing like the house and then like the golf course, the little mini golf course that he has there. And like, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, oh, this is like, I've always wanted to go to MJ's house to play basketball, like how can you really top playing basketball at Michael Jordan's house?
Dude, it's like a once in a lifetime thing. And you were invited there by the brand, or how did you get
there? I was invited there by Jordan Brand. Okay. So it wasn't just me. It was a bunch of different people. Sports Illustrated, ESPN, Nice Kicks, Complex, Sneaker News, like all of those, like all of the typical sneaker outlets were invited.
And so, I mean, so that would, or at least that video, you would count as the moment where your account started to do
to really
right
grow.
To the left.
Yeah. That definitely changed the trajectory of the growth on the channel. And started to kind of put me in a different position and separate me from some of the other people that were creating content at the time.
But what, I mean, you had to have had a presence in the space before that though, for you to get that invite. Like, were you just did sneaker publications know who you were before that? Is that like, what was the source of the invite?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, so I was already writing for, so I was writing from 2010 to 2013. I was writing for one of the sneaker publications.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
And then 2013, I started doing it on my own. So I just maintained those relationships that I had from the sneaker publication, and they saw that I was still creating content, so I still got invited to events because I was still producing stuff that people wanted to watch.
Yeah, and so now. You as a nice networking play then to now you're not only doing, you're continuing to do unboxing, but you also have some more broad scope content that you're putting out on a weekly basis. Can you talk briefly about that? About like,
yes,
go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I wanted to do was to show I guess really everyone, that I could do more than just talk about sneakers. And so I wanted to be able to kind of tap into the other interests that I have, which are video games, like technology, cell phones, cameras, computers, and then also entertainment, like, you know, just like anybody else. I'm more well-rounded than just sneakers. Sneakers just happens to be the thing that I'm probably most well-known mm-hmm. for. And so I started creating this other content to really to show that I could talk about other things, and that I could do other things, and that I could host other things. Because at the end of the day, I didn't want it to be handicapped by sneakers.
Pigeonholed.
I didn't want to be pigeonholed by sneakers. I wanted sneakers to be more of a launching point, something that I could always reference and always have as a base, but still be able to do all of these different things. And so that's why I started doing What's Popping, started doing like the top five, and that has opened up doors of me hosting other things and doing things for other people.
Hence why you're spending all day in the editing room and the filming yes. room, because the What's Popping specifically is really well done to me, because it's formatted for IG stories and swipe yes. ups and all that. And it's not just you videoed, like it's really highly produced. Are you doing that all yourself, or do you have a team at this point?
I have an editor and I have a co-writer. I have two. So my team, I guess my production team is three people. Okay. So I have an editor that I work with. I have a writer that I work with. And then, me. Generally, the way that it works now in the pandemic era of life, I light shoot, host, quote unquote, and record everything. I upload it to my editor. He does the edit of What's Popping, sends it back to me, and I post it. And my co-writer and I collaborate on, like, these are the stories that we think we're going to talk about today. And then we put that together. And I use that as my script for the show.
Yeah, interesting. And you're putting those out five times a week, or?
No. That would be nice. I do them. At this point, we're doing What's Popping two or three times a week. And then we're doing a top five once a week. And then I have a show on Snapchat that I do once a week on their Discover called The Kickback. And then I have my YouTube channel, and I try to get like 3 to 4 videos up on my YouTube channel.
Dude, that is crazy, because none of that stuff is a 30-minute deal, bro.
No. Like, this is literally a full-time job.
Yeah.
This is literally my full-time job. Like, I wake up just like anybody else, get ready in the morning, and I come into the studio and I work probably more than I probably should. And I'm like, last night I was literally in here till 10:30 at night. Probably got in here about 9. So I worked like a 12 hour more day Jeez, yesterday.
But isn't it so much better to put in that kind of work for your own thing instead of somebody else's thing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely better that this is me, and I'm working on me, and like, I'm able to focus on like my own interest and being able to make a living off of it. Like, I can't complain about the job that I have.
Yeah, that's so dope. Because from the outside, it really looks like you're living a lot of people's dreams. Like, wait, I get paid to talk about sneaks, video games, entertainment, sports, all at my own pace, all based on my own creative, you know, inputs. But I guess to you, it probably sometimes feels just like work, because it's like hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, I mean, it is. At the end of the day, it is work. Like, I have to research sneakers. I have to make sure I get all of the facts right. I have to make sure that when I'm making a video, that the shoes look as true to what they would look like when you pick them up as possible. So like, there's a level, like I have to tap into like all of these skill sets. I have to be a cinematographer. I have to be a director. I have to be lighting on set. I literally have to do everything that someone would do to quote unquote shoot a commercial when I'm making these like unboxing videos. And same thing for the setup for like What's Popping. Like, it's like it's essentially a studio show that I'm doing out of the loft at my house, setting everything up. So it's more of, you know, it's really just me being, you know, being blessed that I do have these skills and that I'm able to utilize them in this way. But at the end of the day, it's still work. Yeah. Like, I'm still working.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure learning all these skills, like, it's not a, it's such a huge deal. Do you have a background in any of that as far as education wise, or have you really self-taught all these different things?
No, I learned, well, I guess kind of. So when I was in college, I interned at a, at an audio production okay. house, for like a summer. They did like ADR and Foley and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And so like, that was like my foray into that world. But the rest of it, like how to shoot and all that stuff, has basically been YouTube yeah. University has been like my
same. Best Isn't teacher. It funny how people, assume that you've got a massive crew or know what you're doing, when in fact, like every day, yeah. like same for me, like people think I know what I'm doing with the podcast, but like I'm literally YouTubing everything, like how to freaking
yeah.
make the sound right, how to reduce the plosives in the audio, yep. all that kind of stuff. That's so yep. interesting to me.
People don't get that.
But
part.
It's nice because you're not having to cannibalize the money you make. I mean, that's the big win in doing it by yourself yeah. and keeping it lean, is that you're not giving out 15%, giving out 15%, giving out 15%. Even though you may do that for some yeah, people, it's, but like if you had a huge team,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's definitely important too. Like, cause I think people think you make a lot more money than you actually do doing this kind of stuff. So it's important to be able to be able to do all of these things, because you know, for a long time, like it was yeah. just me. Like for years, it was just me. Like I probably started working with a team a year and a half ago, and I was 10 years. So May marked my 10th year in the sneaker world. So for 8.5 of those years, I was doing everything on my own.
Then that's such, I looked back at your YouTube history, basically like sorting by oldest, and you legit are like a pretty good example of being consistent, kind of like the Gary Vee thing, like making 8 years worth of videos and having okay traction, but nothing life changing. And then finally hitting that inflection yeah. point. I think it's like a really great example for people that are like discouraged about creating stuff that they're interested in. Like, yeah, if you want to make videos about Pokemon cards, make it for you and not for the money. Because if you're making it for me, it's going to be very visible to the people on the outside.
Yeah. And a lot of people get frustrated because I mean, and they see what like how my videos perform, or a product that I get, or the relationships that I have with brands, and they don't realize like that's a 10-year relationship.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a oh, I'm just on YouTube yesterday and now I'm doing all of these things. Like that's a 10-year relationship. That's a, you know, some long nights, you know, nights in a hotel going to events where, you know, a brand flies people out to go check out a shoe. And I'm working by myself. So I shoot everything at the event and I come back and I'm at the hotel editing so I can get a video up that night while everyone else is out to dinner.
Yeah.
Like people don't see, they don't see that side of it. All they see is the fact that, oh, you're in New York at a sneaker event.
Must be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. Like it must be nice. You're going to New York. Yeah. But like, yeah, I'm in a hotel room.
Paying for Wi-Fi.
Might as well be at home. Right. Right. paying for the faster Wi-Fi so the video will upload faster, because otherwise it's going to take all night long.
That's so crazy. But that's a good transition for me, because you do now work with some pretty, I mean, you work with all the coolest brands, like objectively. And that's a kind of a snowball effect now. Like once, you know, Adidas does a good deal with you, then I'm sure other brands are like, oh, Jacques Slade got some pretty good exposure for their deal. How has that been? I mean, because that's one of the biggest things that I'm jealous of, because you, if people don't know, a big part of, or maybe I don't know how big of a part of it, but a big part for me is your unboxing of these different sneaker and video game console collabs. Mm-hmm. And so there's several videos of Jacques on YouTube unboxing an Xbox and something other collab or a PlayStation 4. And so it really does seem like he's collecting Xboxes and PlayStations. What has that been like? Like, what are those, maybe what do those conversations look like, or how do you feel about doing those type of collab deals?
I mean, I think they're awesome. It allows me to really connect two parts of my world. Like the tech video game space is something that I absolutely love and that I always kind of want to be a part of. And being able to tie that into the sneaker world is, I think, like just like the perfect execution. Sneakers, I think people that wear sneakers or that are into sneakers are generally people that play video games or that are super into tech as well. It's like you're kind of like the sneaker guy is generally like the cutting edge guy that's into most cool things. Mm-hmm. and like tech happens to be like what's cool and sneakers happens to be what's cool. So to be able to blend those two worlds together is, you know, it's the best thing to me.
Yeah, that seems super fun. And both of those spaces change so frequently, like such as like you having to put out so much content each week. Sneaker news and video game news, tech news just change every freaking week. Like to you.
Oh, every single week.
Yeah. And it's interesting to think about, and maybe you don't want to think about it, but how it's just like, it's never going to stop. Like it's always,
right.
It's always getting better and getting more interesting, but also changing every time. So there's really not a stopping point.
It's harder now.
Say again.
I say it's harder now because it's hard to keep up with everything.
Yeah. And there's a lot more, I guess, quote unquote, competition in for people's attention. I mean, it's so saturated now with podcasts and YouTube and everything that you're doing a really good job at staying relevant. But that is a constant battle, I think,
for sure.
Do you care about that at all? Or is it still just like a love language for you to say, hey, I'm going to put this content out? Or do you have, you know, like a roadmap for your career in that regard?
No, I think I think that the roadmap for my career is to continue to stay relevant. Like that's the goal, is like to create content, like create good content that people want to watch and that people can engage in, and give them an experience that some of them just aren't able to be a part of. Like a lot of the reason why I started doing unboxings, was because I wanted, it reminded me of those days when I was a kid and I would watch the news and they'd bring all the cool toys on right before Christmas. And they show you like all of these new things they're going to launch for Christmas, this new skateboard or this new electronic scooter or whatever it was. And like, they'd show all that stuff on the news. And like, that's how I find out information. That's how I find out what I wanted to put down on my Christmas list. So when I started doing unboxings, like that's sort of the philosophy that I took, like that was how I wanted to kind of reproduce that feeling. So as long as I can continue to do that and it still remains exciting to me, I think that's going to be like the path for me. Obviously I want to branch off and do other things down the line, but if I can always kind of keep that as my base, I'm a happy man.
Cause it's at least allowed you to be fully employed with that and not have to grind it out at midnight type thing. And I really appreciate, like, it seems like when you like tell your parents about, this guy unboxes sneakers on YouTube and has a million subscribers, it doesn't make sense to a lot of people, but it does like hit some kind of tangible need that people kind of like you growing up maybe thought, or I definitely thought growing up, like, I'm never going to have all this cool, the coolest, newest stuff. But for people that, at least for me, when I watch these unboxing videos, it's at least a glimpse into what it's like to have a $11,000 pair of Dornbeckers or whatever. That's pretty cool to me. Do you get that kind of feedback often?
Cause I mean, even for me, like, I'd never imagined that I'd have this stuff, and like I saw it through the eyes of like the cool people in my neighborhood when I was young that had the Jordans, that had the cool Nikes, that had the cool Adidas shoes. Like I kind of lived vicariously through them seeing it. And so that's kind of what, you know, I'm presenting it in that way for people to kind of live through me, or at least see it in a way that, that isn't just from the brand. They can hear like someone that actually has it and that talks about
unbiased.
It.
Unbiased.
Unbiased. And I never want it to be like, hey, look, I have this. Like I try to never present it as like, I'm cool, I have this. I always try to present it as, this is what this is. That way I don't ever want the audience to feel like I don't acknowledge that I'm very lucky to be in the position that I'm in.
There are some daily comforts that just make you grateful and feel more grounded in life, like petting the dog, hitting your snooze button, and of course, that first cup of Joe in the morning. These are things that you count on every day to help you get where you want to go. Things like the Upper Room Daily Devotional Guide. You can count on the Upper Room for daily inspiration, daily community, and daily prayer. It is the only daily devotional magazine written by readers, ordinary people who have encountered God in daily situations. The Upper Room is here for you every day through an email, custom app, or printed magazine. Enjoy a free 30-day trial of the email or app service by visiting upperroom.org/welcome. That's upperroom.org/welcome to get your first 30 days free. Yeah, I love that. Because, I mean, it could be very easy to flex. Like, oh, look at this. Look, I'm at Jordan's spot. Oh, right. Look, I got this new Xbox. And I think you do a good job of being like, look, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But this is how awesome this thing is. And it doesn't ever feel like you're doing it for the Vine.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know,
it's,
like it's
that's never the case.
RIP Vine. Yeah. So you've done, I'm interested in kind of your entertainment career too. Like you had an appearance on Community.
Yeah.
So like Joel McHale has been on the podcast. He wrote the foreword to my book.
Oh, amazing.
Real big fan. And I read today that you were on Community. What was that whole experience like?
It was great. It was really cool. It was a really cool experience. So I used to do music a lot when I was younger. I did a lot of rap.
I saw those videos, the hip-hop videos.
Yeah.
Rap.
Yeah, God bless it. And so...
Hey, you had bars. I'm not going to let you be humble on that. You did have bars. A much better bars than a lot of people today.
So I got connected with a music supervisor for Community. And he was like, hey, we're doing this new show called Community. Do you want to work on, do you want to do something, some music for the show? And obviously I was like, of course. And so they was like, well, we have this idea for the pilot. So for the pilot episode, I performed the song that Dan Harmon, the showrunner, that he wrote. So he wrote like this song that was going to be playing out of the radio in the pilot. And so I did the song for the pilot. The show eventually got picked up, and then I did more songs for the show. So I did probably, I would say maybe like 10 songs for like the background of the show. And in the process of that, they had one episode where they wanted a rapper to perform with Pierce, to make a bad song about Pierce. And so that's how I got on the show. So I did, Eric and I performed the song dissing Pierce, and then Pierce and I did like the bumper at the end of the show dissing Eric. That's how like that kind of happened, because I was doing music for the show. That's how I ended up getting on the show.
That's cool. And were you, did you feel comfortable in that environment, or did it feel like, was it weird to be in with a bunch of, maybe they weren't TV stars back then, but like, did it feel weird in that environment, not having a ton of acting or entertainment experience in that
regard? Well, I mean, I technically had the entertainment experience, because I was like performing around town. I was performing in, you know, around Southern California, San Diego, Santa Barbara, like up and down kind of like the West Coast.
Okay. So you were gigging.
So I was doing gigs then. So I had performed on stage before, and really I wasn't acting. I was just rapping on stage. So, you know, it wasn't like a big thing, big like transition for me. And I didn't really have any real scenes with any of, like, I didn't have any scenes with Joel. Like, I don't even think I've even met him. For the day that I was shooting, I think I met, it might've just been Eric. That might've been really Eric. And then Chevy are like the only like actors on the show that I met. Like the others were in the crowd, but like, I didn't have like any direct any connection with them.
Interesting. And more recently you had a spot, and I can't tell if they made it a full thing or not, but you had a spot in the Fresh Prince remake trailer.
Yeah. Yes.
Is that going to be an actual movie, or was that just a teaser?
No. So that was just a project for the guy that directed that, Morgan Cooper. He had this idea for this reimagining of the Fresh Prince. And so, he worked with TLD or Sun Squared Media to put it together, and I'm friends with Coop, and I'm friends with the guys at Sun Squared, and so they were like, hey, do you want to play this role in like the trailer that we're shooting? And I was like, sure, like obviously, yeah, it'd be fun. So that was that. Now as a result of that, Coop, it got in front of Will because it went viral, like, which no one really expected. It ended up going viral, got in front of Will. And so they're actually going to do a show, but it's going to be, from what I understand, it's totally disconnected from that trailer. Like that trailer is just like the idea. It was like the idea for it. And I don't, as far as I know, as of right now, none of the people that were in the trailer will make it into like the remake of the show. from my knowledge. But I mean, that obviously could change.
Y'all should get some credit, bro. They're about to make bazillions off that idea that y'all basically served up to them.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, I shouldn't say we, not me. It was all Coop. It was all Coop's idea. He wrote the script. So Coop is working on the show. He's one of the writers. He's one of the showrunners. So like it proved to be, you know, very lucrative for Coop. So he's definitely like making a show with them, and they have two seasons, so it's all a big deal.
Dang, that's cool, man. Yeah. LA is an interesting place where an idea can be something, can just be an idea one day, and then the next week it ends up being a full fledged deal. That's really cool.
Fledged deal. Like, I'm super proud of Coop, super happy for him. Like, that's a huge thing.
Yeah, I bet that'd be so fun. And that doesn't happen to many people, where you just come up with an idea and it manifests in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah.
Staying on the entertainment side, you did do something during the NBA season with my guy Words Played, who I had on the podcast.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Like, so you were the lead for some type of NBA commentary show, and Words Played showed up being Words Played.
Being
Talk
Words
about
played.
That briefly.
Yeah, so NBC Sports, I should say, they wanted to do a show, like an NBA commentary show. And so we did like a pilot run of, I think it was 10 episodes. I think we did 10 episodes. And Words Played came on for one of the episodes because we had like these funny segments in between like the commentary. And he came on and just ripped it. Like, he's so dope. Like, he is incredibly dope. So it was like, I was super excited that he came on. Cause I remember when they told me that, I was like, oh, we're thinking about getting a rapper for this episode. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. But they didn't know.
I mean, I'm a rapper, but
yeah,
you know,
and that was part of it too. That was part of my judginess. And I was like, well, like, cause they didn't know who it was going to be at the time. And I was like, all right, well, you know, cool. If they can't pull their weight, then, you know, I'll just put something together myself. Cause, you know, obviously.
No big. I've got it right here.
Yeah, I've got it. But then it ended up being Words Played. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, he'll do 10 times better than I ever would have. And he did.
Yeah. He's so underrated. I mean, I didn't really know about him until about a year ago or so, but we're buddies now. And not only does he have an amazing rap voice, he's up there with some of the top rappers for me because of his voice. Like, it sounds really smooth and deep and everything. But he's also super smart and super funny, which is like a real dangerous combo
for a rapper, especially for a rapper. If you're smart and you're funny, like that puts you in a different league when it comes to rap.
Oh yeah, I think he's gonna. I mean, he's got a good following now, but I think he's gonna reach some inflection point. Personally, like, his stuff he's doing right now, I don't know if you've seen about the circle of trust and everything. He's doing this whole comedic bit on Instagram, which is hilarious. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet.
All right. Well, he's basically doing this whole super satirical bit about like influencer gurus, like the Tai Lopez's of the world, but he's basically giving all terrible advice, like taking out more credit cards, like spending more than it. It's really funny.
I love it.
So the 2020 has been weird.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even have to wear shoes this year. As somebody who also creates content based loosely around sneakers, what does it look like for you this year? Like, I mean, I've seen your content, but has that shifted your creative process at all? Or what has that looked like for you?
Yeah, I think it's shifted me creatively just because the product is new product, I should say. Is less of a focus, and it's forced me to kind of find deeper stories to tell around other things. So I think that's probably the biggest shift for me. It's funny because like everybody's like, oh, we're at home all the time now. And I'm like, well, I was always at home all the time. This is, that's how I kind of lived my life. And so for me, I guess the biggest impact is it's forcing me to tell stories in different ways, which is, almost really a blessing in disguise, so that I'm not reliant on the newest, hypest thing, and I can just tell great stories regardless.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because I really felt that tension whenever, like, this whole platform has been just given to me. Like, I haven't earned it like you have, but I did feel that tension when COVID started happening. Like, oh crap, this is about to make me super irrelevant if I don't pivot some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing about pivoting is that, or at least for my account, people come to see one certain thing on my account. And the idea of changing that has been a challenge. Like, I haven't perfectly done it, and I don't think I've achieved it yet, but that's something I think about a ton, is like how to maintain people's attention and give them what they want, I guess, but also serve them up something that maybe they didn't know they wanted.
Yeah.
What is your process for, like, so you're pushing out like 10 pieces of content a week, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Is there anything you do each week to, or there, is there a certain like 10 set of accounts that you're checking on Sundays to like come up with new pieces of content? What does that look like for you?
God, this is purely for me. It's constantly every, I mean, I'm on the internet every day, every morning. I'm up like scanning through accounts, scanning through Instagram, scanning through Twitter, scanning through Hypebeast, High Snob. I'm going to like Complex Sneakers. I'm going to Soul Collector. I'm going to Huffington Post. I'm going to the New York Times. Like, I'm going to everything in the morning and just kind of like scanning through and collecting as much information as I can to see if it somehow kind of taps into what I need, you know, something that's relevant or that actually has some sort of relevance to what I'm doing. I'm checking YouTube. I'm checking The Verge. I'm checking like Input Mag. I'm checking Nylon. I'm checking People. I'm checking Snapchat Discover. Like, I'm literally on every platform in the mornings. And, you know, I probably spend about an hour, hour and a half every morning just going through every site that I can kind of think of, seeing what they have, seeing what's going on, see what's new has been announced, what might have happened, what some celebrity did, what some celebrity wore, see if that makes important, if that's important enough to talk about, what NBA guys wore that night, like all of those things kind of, you just kind of filter those into, you know, filter those into a funnel and find out like, all right, what's going to come out at the end and how am I going to make this all work together?
Jeez. Do you ever feel like you get content overload though? Like, or do you have to intentionally unplug at some points? Like, how did, I know that you run a ton. Is that your escape for that kind of thing? Or do you have to like unplug for weeks at a time? Cause that's a ton of content every single day.
Yeah. I run probably 2 to 3 times a week, sometimes 4 if I'm actually doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And like, I, that's just like my me time. It's just me and like an album or something. And like, I literally just listen to an album all the way through, or I'll listen to a podcast all the way through, and just kind of vibe out and kind of disappear for a minute. And then throughout the day, I often like sign off, walk away from the computer, go eat, play with the dog, you know, watch TV, just give myself a moment to kind of get away from everything and then come back and, you know, start editing or something like that. And like making sure I can ignore the notifications. I've started using the sleep timer in iOS now for iOS 14, where it like kind of blacks out your screen and it doesn't send you notifications or anything to your watch or to your phone. And like, I have that come on, I believe at like 10:15, 10:30 every night. And so like, that's it. And that's it.
So you're not sitting in bed. Freaking.
So I'm not sitting in bed. Yeah. Getting notifications, hearing my phone vibrate, me wondering who it is. And so like, that's been really good. I've been using that for probably like the last week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. And so like, that's been really cool. Cause it's like as soon as that comes on, I'm not getting any notifications. Even if I'm not in bed and I'm still working, it stops the notifications from coming in and it doesn't show anything until seven the next morning when my alarm goes off. And even then I have to dismiss it in order for it to start showing notifications. So if I wake up and I feel like I'm going to go back to sleep, I just stop the alarm and then it still doesn't show me any notification. So I kind of love that.
I need to do that because it can turn into an addiction real quick.
Yeah.
Absolutely. As far as like feeling like you got to be looking at your phone all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely feel that. Okay. We're running up on time. I don't want to take too much of your time. I just love to know, like, so you're doing all these things all the time. You've been doing this for 10 years. Is there something that sticks out to you that is like your most proud moment, or like, what are you most proud of, throughout this entire content career of yours?
Gosh, that's a great question. I think more than anything, if there's like a moment to be proud of, I don't know if it's a moment, it's more of like a collection of moments of being, of being put in a position to help others and to kind of pass on the knowledge that I've gotten. I've been able to really help and assist a lot of like a lot of the guys that are on sneaker YouTube, like with helping them with their business and stuff like that, and helping them grow and giving them information that I have, like being able to pass that down, or being able to go back to the Boys and Girls Club in my old neighborhood and get all of the kids their shoes.
Or, yes, or that's awesome.
Working with like Foot Locker and the Fred Jordan Mission and getting like kids in LA school supplies and getting them shoes and getting them socks and getting them food to eat and haircuts and clothes and stuff like that. I think those are probably the most important moments. I'm a firm believer, you know, based on my faith, that I'm put in this position to bless others. And so like those are the moments that I think are most important.
Yeah, I agree. And that's huge. I mean, 10 years of doing this, even for one of those moments at the Boys and Girls Club or in the city of LA,
yeah,
worth it all for your whole life.
Yep.
I would say. What an awesome position for him to put you in, to say, hey, God works in mysterious colorways. You're going to be talking about sneakers, tech, and video games, and get the opportunity to change kids' lives, dude. Yep. That's super encouraging. And validation for what you're doing. Like,
yeah,
you wouldn't have ever been able to be in that position at scale if you didn't have what you have now.
Absolutely.
Dude, that's super encouraging. Okay, I guess a couple last questions, less serious. So what are some sneakers you're excited about going into the tail end of 20 and into 21? And you can't say the Union Jordan 4s or...
Well, I am kind of excited about that. I want the black. I don't have any of the Union Jordan 4s. I wasn't able to get them. I do want the black ones because I want to tie dye them.
Snap.
Bleach dye them. So I've been trying to get.
Because you actually wear your kicks.
Yeah. I've never sold a pair of sneakers. So I'm trying
for real?
To get. Yeah, for real.
Oh snap!
I've given them away.
You just wear everything.
I give them away, but I've never actually sold a pair.
Dang! So you wear your sneaks.
Yeah,
that's legit. Okay, so back to
I want to bleach dye the Union 4s. I really like that. I don't know I forgot what they're calling it. That Jordan 1 that looks like the Travis Scott one. I'm really excited about that.
Like the GR one?
Yeah, like the GR one. I think that's going to be really.
I know what you're talking about. Jordan like one. The poor man's Travis Scott Jordan 1?
Yeah, which I think actually probably looks better than the Travis Scott one, but we'll see. Uh-huh. When we get it in hand. What else? I think Nike, if what I've seen is correct, Nike's doing something else with the Adapt by the end of the year. So I'm kind of excited. I'm kind of excited about that. I honestly really like what Puma is doing with the Dreamer and their RS line. I feel like they're in a position to really do something cool and different. So I hope they kind of stay true to that.
Kind of like what Adidas was in right before Boost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Puma's like right when they got into the dad shoe stuff that started, I gave a little more respect to Puma, like, cause those silhouettes looked a lot better than kind of what you think of when you think of Puma sneakers.
Yeah. And hopefully they're changing that narrative about what they represent. Mm-hmm. And then, that's probably the biggest thing. And then possibly golf. I feel like a lot of the golf brands are starting to see the value in giving things a lifestyle sort of slant to them. Adidas is doing the Superstar golf shoe. Nike Golf is doing like the Jordan stuff. And, I feel like that trend line is only going to continue to go up as golf brands realize that they can create golf product that people can wear off the course and it doesn't need to scream golf in order for it to be accepted by the golf community. And a lot of it has to do with players like Brooks stepping in and wearing off-white Prestos and, you know, and Ricky always kind of being Ricky with the loud colors and all of that stuff. I think they're really kind of breaking the rules of what you expect to see a golf player wearing.
Yeah. And I think maybe it was Dustin Johnson that wore maybe Jordan 3 golf or maybe the Air Max 1 golf, and people were talking about it a ton. And that I think opened people's eyes a lot to be like, oh, this makes golf look a lot cooler than maybe the standard Ping black golf shoes or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, that's a huge market. Of course, Nike's going to freaking print money on that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And do you play a lot of golf?
I won't say I play a lot. I play as often as I can, though.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you mean you don't have 4 hours every week to play 18 holes of golf?
Nah, I wish I could play once a week. That would be amazing to be, even if it's a par three once a week would be great, but I can't even get to the range once a week. So
par threes are so fun. That's about the only golf I can play. Otherwise I make a fool out of myself. All right. So we're at time. Jacques Slade, I know this is an incredibly expensive hour of your time. So I really appreciate you spending this. What do you have to pub right now? I want to give the opportunity. Where can people find you online and any projects that you got going on that you can pub?
I hate this part of things like this. I don't like to push anything. If you found this podcast interesting at all, you can give me a follow at KUSTOO. I'm on all of the places, Twitter, Instagram, Bumble, Grindr, YouTube, Snapchat, Amazon, all of those places you can find me at Cousteau. Hopefully you enjoyed this. If anything, make sure you're downloading this podcast and listening to this podcast, which obviously you're doing right now.
Yes.
Don't worry about following me. I have enough followers. I don't need anybody else to follow me. You're not going to like it anyway. All right.
Jacques Cousteau Slade, thanks for spending the time today. I know you won't do it, but go subscribe to his YouTube, Jacques Slade, or I guess YouTube is though.
If you type in Jacques Slade, it'll bring up everything.
It'll come up. Yeah. He's got incredibly well-produced content every week. Check him out on Instagram, YouTube, all that. Jacques, thanks so much again for coming on. Super inspired by you, and you're, a huge example for me. So I appreciate you spending the time and giving the insight into your world. And I hope you continue to crush it, man. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me on. Really, really appreciate it.
Thanks so much again for listening to this episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast. If you did not do what I told you to do at the beginning, head on over to Apple Podcasts, smash that subscribe button, leave a rating and a review if you feel so inclined, and be sure to share it with somebody that you love or hate. I really appreciate everybody doing that. Thank you for spending the time with me today, and be sure to keep your eye out for the next episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.